The next case is 07-1195, Columbus Bar Association versus Philip Brian Willett. Mr. Mann.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes of time for rebuttal. I'd like to begin our discussion, our conversation this morning, by making 3 points briefly and then expanding on those points. Point one, the grievance in this case were Dr. and Mrs. Trott. Mr. Willett provided them with an appropriate professional service in exchange for an appropriate fee. They sustained no damage. Point two, Mr. Willett spent a considerable amount of time with Dr. and Mrs. Trott, approximately 2 hours, at which time the Trotts say, Mr. Willett treated us in a very professional fashion, answered our questions, and so forth. Point three, Mr. Willett has been engaged in the active clinical practice of law for over 30 years. This is his first experience with the legal ethics system. He's had no malpractice problems. He's been disassociated from the EPLS law firm in Michigan for about or approximately 2 years. The evidence showed that he's a good lawyer, a good person, and a good family man. And in view of these facts, and in view of all of the other factors in this case, and the court's precedents in Heisler and Kramer and similar cases, we would respectfully suggest that a stayed suspension is the appropriate sanction in this case. If I may, I'd like to expand on these points. First, as I said, and I know this is repeating, but it's important, Mr. Willett provided the Trotts with an appropriate professional service in exchange for a fair fee. The Trotts were not damaged. My second point is Dr. Trott testified, and Mrs. Trott testified, that Mr. Willett was professional with them. Dr. Trott testified, for example, at pages 39 and 40 of his deposition, Mr. Willett we do not contend he was dishonest with us or with my wife. He never told us anything he knew was untrue. By way of further example, in his deposition at page 36, Dr. Trott testified, Mr. Willett always treated us with reasonable courtesy. Mr. Willett listened to what we had to say, and Mr. Willett always answered our questions. As I mentioned, Mr. Willett has been engaged in the active clinical practice of law out there on the front lines for over 30 years. This is his first and only encounter with the legal ethics system, and the evidence produced at trial showed that this man, who's not been affiliated in any way with the EPLS law firm for about 2 years, is a good lawyer, a good person, and a good family man. I'd like to talk about the charges against Mr. Willett and break them down and, of course, answer any questions.
Well, counsel, before you do that, there's an admission that he violated these rules. Is that correct?
Yes.
You're not arguing that they didn't violate the rules. You're saying that the punishment's too harsh.
Yes.
That's recommended here, and you would take a suspended sanction and that would be fine.
Yes, Your Honor.
But what I just heard is that the Trotts were not injured in any way, and he was professional with them. But isn't there the failure to recognize that we have to look at what happens to the perception about in the legal community? We have rules that govern the way attorneys practice, and it's the profession that gets harmed in addition to the actual claimants when we hear disciplinary cases. So to say, you know, I didn't hear anything from you acknowledging that there's another victim here, and that is the practicing attorneys in the state of Ohio and the perception of the legal profession. And when a, you know, it's like when an attorney violates a rule, we're all harmed by it. The position of trust is lessened for the legal community. What do you have to say about that?
I would say respectfully that Your Honor is correct. And Mr. Ouellette has, and the board made some reference to this, he's very sorry that he violated the provisions he violated. With respect to the admissions, he admitted to two violations. He takes full responsibility, and he acknowledges Your Honor's very important point. And it is an important point. And it's one point to be taken into consideration with all of the other relevant factors.
And I guess my, you know, I'm glad to hear you say that he's cognizant of that, but if a consequence is established by the disciplinary authorities when an attorney does do something contrary, and it's perceived as being too light or an inconsequential sanction, doesn't that in turn violate the trust within the legal community?
It could, Your Honor. A sanction that's too harsh would have the exact same result. I would respectfully submit to the members of this distinguished panel that the sanction this panel should impose is the right sanction for this case without any respect, and I say this with respect, to what various members of the public will think, because some will think it's too harsh, and some will think it's not harsh enough. And I suspect, I know that this court's in that position with every case. Every time the court decides a case, somebody doesn't like it.
What distinguishes this sanction from other sanctions in basically what I call trust mill cases where we've actually suspended? What is the difference here that merits against suspension that's different from the cases where we did suspend?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe in the Heisler case and the Kramer case, which were decided earlier this year, there were suspensions, but the suspensions were stayed, and that's what we're suggesting should be here. In the Fishman case, where, as I recall, there was a one-year suspension, as I recall, not stayed, Justice Stratton, that was a totally different fact situation where the trust mill people from a company, I believe from Nevada, or perhaps California, went out and met with the client, and the lawyer had de minimis contact, and there was a commingling of funds. And we don't have that here. What we have here is Mr. Ouellette went out, he met with these folks, he spent considerable time with them, and as Dr. Trott himself said, he listened to us, he treated us respectfully, he answered all of our questions, and he never intentionally misled us. So I think those are important distinguishing factors with respect to your important question.
Mr. Mann, as you know, on page 19 of the relator's brief, there is a series of points that the bar makes. Some of them seem to indicate that your client doesn't really yet accept the significance of the violations he committed. You indicated that he does. Do you want to clarify that or respond to the about 10 points they make on page 19?
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Ouellette has admitted to two violations. He was charged with 11 violations. A 12th violation was added for the first time in the CBA's pretrial brief, and a 13th violation was added at the hearing itself. Mr. Ouellette's always admitted violations. He's sorry for those, but on some of these cases, and I can address them if the court would like, or some of these charges, Mr. Ouellette didn't do it. And because he didn't do it, he has an ethical duty to tell the truth, to stand before the panel and say, this is what I believe is the truth. So I think, respectfully, Mr. Chief Justice, he gets it. He's sorry. He's remorseful. He's full of contrition. But he doesn't admit things. For example, he was charged with telephone solicitation. May I say to this panel, all 100% of the evidence against Mr. Ouellette on that point is absolutely inadmissible hearsay. And if we're going to be convicting people on inadmissible hearsay, we can convict anybody of anything. So no, Mr. Ouellette does not agree with that. Mr. Ouellette does not agree that he attempted to exonerate himself from malpractice in this case. He had no motive to do so. He had a contract with Dr. and Mrs. Trott that said he'll provide free future legal services with respect to the trust document. And when Dr. Trott, after Mr. Ouellette did all of his work, asked for his money back, Mr. Ouellette had a motive to exonerate himself from the liability under the contract to do future legal work for free, and that's what he attempted to do. I would also, I suppose, point out, simply for purposes of discussion, even if we were to assume or pretend for the sake of argument that Mr. Ouellette was attempting to limit his liability to the Trotts for malpractice, they were represented by counsel. Now, they wouldn't tell Mr. Ouellette who that counsel was. We now know who it was. But they wouldn't tell him who the counsel was. And that's an entirely different situation than an attorney who attempts to do that when clients are not represented. If I may say to the panel, I see my time is running out, and if there's no questions, I'll reserve my time.
I actually do have a question, and that is, I was a little confused in reading this to understand exactly what your client's position was about awareness of the disciplinary rules that were eventually admitted here. Was he simply unaware that these ethical standards existed and therefore sort of operated in a vacuum, or was he aware that they existed but didn't believe that his conduct violated them, or was he aware and knew or should have known that his conduct violated them and he went ahead anyway? So I'm not quite clear what your client's position is about this issue.
Without being disrespectful to Mr. Ouellette with respect to the violations he's admitted, he did it because he was stupidly unaware of what the rules were. And he should have been aware, and it's his fault and his fault alone that he wasn't aware. And for that, he is 100% responsible, and he's sorry.
But counsel, these are not new rules. Would you say that there's something that he's been in practice for, what, 30 years?
About 32 now.
Okay. Anything that was violated here, was this something that wasn't kind of a common knowledge amongst attorneys? You just don't do this?
Well, I wish I could say it was common knowledge. It's not, but I think the point that the justice brought up was this was stupidity. And I don't say that to demean or to be disrespectful to Mr. Ouellette, but that's where most legal ethics cases come from, is a stupid lack of knowledge about what the rule says. And as Your Honor pointed out, these were the old rules. These aren't the new rules. If there's no further questions at this point, I'll reserve the balance of my time, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mann. Ms. Hapner.
Mr. Chief Justice, and if it please the court, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes rebuttal time. Relator requests this court to suspend Mr. Ouellette for at least 1 year for the reasons set forth in our brief. And today I will address 3 points in support of our position and respond to a few points raised by Mr. Ouellette's counsel. First, as one can see through the briefs, Mr. Ouellette placed his own interests, and particularly the interests of complying with his contract with EPLS, above his duty to the Trotts. He accepted fees from the Trotts for doing legal work. He provided them an Exhibit 8 with a trust agreement that says explicitly that it was prepared by him, even though all he did was go meet with them and partially fill out an intake application form, which was Exhibit 12, and he faxed that 2 days later to EPLS. They prepared the trust document, they federally expressed it to him, and then he delivered it to the Trotts on trick-or-treat night and sat outside with them going through this while they passed out candy. He did not tell the Trotts that someone else was preparing the legal documents for them. He did not tell them that he was sharing any information with someone else.
How is the preparing of legal documents any different than a lawyer getting forms off the internet or from a book and filling the blanks in? Where is that a violation?
Because I think when you're getting forms off the internet, you're at least reading them and trying to figure out whether or not they apply to your client. You're not just taking
something
off.
Was there proof presented that these forms did not apply to this client? Was there any malpractice testimony that this was the wrong trust for the client?
There was testimony that they were extremely verbose and poorly written, but, Your Honor,
that's a different
excessive fee issue was dismissed.
An ethical violation.
Right.
That's just poor
lawyer. All he did was review the documents much the way Attorney Fishman did in that case. He got them from someone else. He says he looked at them, but they even misspelled the name of Pickerington in some of the places where it's listed in the document. And then, unlike Heisler and Kramer, the two cases that he says apply, both of those attorneys actually did prepare the documents physically themselves. And certainly his clients thought that he was physically preparing them.
You're not implying that lawyers can't get document forms from other sources and put blanks in?
Not at all.
That's illegal or unethical somehow?
No, not at all, Your Honor. The other thing that he did was he set them up for a sales presentation by the insurance broker, Larry Spencer. He knew that Larry Spencer was paid only if he sold insurance products. He got an 8% commission. He wasn't just driving down from Detroit for his health. He wasn't doing it as a public service. He came down because he wanted to make a sales presentation. Mr. Trott never told this. Mr. Ouellet never told this to the Trotts. He never told them. He said instead it was about getting a second witness for the documents and because he would explain the funding procedure of how to transfer their assets into the trust. He said nothing about the fact that they were going to be getting.
I have a question about the second witness. This part is more troubling to me than getting the forms from somebody else and filling in the blanks. How can you have a second witness to those documents when they've already signed them?
I'm not a trust attorney, and I'm probably not the best person to ask. My understanding is if the person who signed the documents is there to affirm that that is their signature, it would be okay for the second person to then do that.
Was there any evidence that Mr. Ouellet got any part of the fee from the insurance sales?
No, Your Honor. This is not just about a trust Milt case. Mr. Ouellet also knowingly refused to supervise, at least according to his testimony, the marketing activities of the company that he made his exclusive marketing agent. Mr. Benskowski, the managing partner for Estate Planning Legal Services, EPLS, actually testified that he'd shared all of this information with Mr. Ouellet ahead of time and that Mr. Ouellet had signed off on all of the marketing pieces before they were sent out. Mr. Ouellet denied that. Instead, he said that the first time he saw this information was in March 2005 and that he made no effort to supervise. I'm not saying that this is a case where someone tried to supervise and then was duped by the marketing agent, but what I am saying is you can't knowingly put your head in a hole and then say, I can't be held responsible for anything they did. They were his exclusive marketing agent for the Estate Planning Legal Services, and he cannot absolve himself of responsibility by delegating everything to them and then finding out later that they were making misleading and unverifiable statements. Mr. Ouellet didn't know enough about probate law or trust law to know that the statements in the marketing and materials were, in fact, misleading or unverifiable, and that was brought out in questioning by the panel when they even asked him about letters which he signed to the Trotts that were included in the trust documents, which, again, were part of Exhibit 8. And as this court has already asked questions about, Mr. Ouellet still doesn't understand his professional obligations. He denies in the brief that he filed only 2 months ago that he had set the Trotts up for a sales presentation. But as you can see from the excerpts of the testimony that was included in my brief, he freely admits that that was, in fact, a significant reason why he introduced Mr. Spencer to the Trotts. He denies that he disclosed any confidential information to the Trotts. Again, he doesn't seem to understand what the confidential information is when he was passing on this information to Estate Planning Legal Services, including the Social Security numbers, without telling the Trotts, knowing that it would be given to Larry Spencer, who could then use that information to set up these sales appointments. We submit that Mr. Ouellet should be suspended for at least 1 year. Unlike all the other cases that you've been cited, Mr. Ouellet was found to have violated, I think, 10 different rules, which is greatly more than even Attorney Fishman or Heisler or Kramer. There was dishonesty involved, and even today you heard his attorney talk about the fact that he did not make any overt lies to the Trotts. He was very cordial to them.
Counsel, would you address the one thing that I think is bothersome, especially bothersome to me, is the attempt to execute a full release in exchange for a return of $500 of this fee, and the denial that that meant a full release from malpractice?
Right. Mr. Ouellette, when he was contacted by Dr. Trott and asked for a full refund, Mr. Ouellette said he would return part of the money because he'd already given $750 to EPLS, and he said that he would, in fact, give them a partial release in exchange for a, he would give them a partial refund in exchange for a full release.
And that was after he was apprised of the fact that the Trotts were having difficulty with the dealings they had with him.
In fact, they had told him that they had retained another attorney who said that the agreement was not very well prepared and that they should file a grievance with the Bar Association. And after they tell him this, he then comes back and says, I will give you back $500, I believe, in exchange for a full release and with the understanding that you're responsible for any future remaining funding of the trust and any changes that may be needed in the future. The letter talked about the three separate things. It didn't just say, I'm not going to do any more work for you in the future. He knew that they were going to file a grievance. They had said that they might file a grievance. Now, the Trotts didn't really know who to believe. I mean, they've got all these different lawyers telling them different things. They still don't know what to believe. They wanted somebody to tell them the truth in this matter, and that's why they eventually did file the grievance. But even after they sent this letter, they had, in fact, met with Mr. Ouellette again because they found him to be very cordial.
He has since repaid all of the...
He has. So when we, after we filed the formal complaint in this case.
Yeah. And you did, I understand you are seeking a one-year suspension?
At least 1 year, yes, Your Honor.
All right. I thought the board and... I thought the board recommendation was a one-year, six-state.
That's right, Your Honor.
You're not in accord with that?
Not on a personal level, no. It's up to the discretion of the court, as far as I'm concerned, but we think at least 1 year would be appropriate.
I'd like to ask you the question that I asked the respondent's counsel, and that is, in your view, which of these sort of awareness situations apply to this case generally, that he was unaware of the ethical standards that applied in this case and the disciplinary rules, so he was sort of blissfully, you know, engaged in this, or he was aware of them, but he didn't really believe that they applied to what he was doing, that is, his conduct didn't fit within their proscriptions, or three, he was aware and he knew, but he went ahead and did it anyway.
I don't think I can get into his head entirely. I know that he read the Fishman case and a few other cases before he signed the contract with EPLS. And so he should have been aware that setting up his clients to meet with insurance brokers was going to be a problem. And he should have known that splitting fees with an out-of-state law firm was going to be a problem. So I'm not sure I can say all the way along. I don't know that he was aware of all the rules or that he exercised what I would consider to be prudent diligence. If you're going to engage in this sort of marketing scheme, I know that when I went out on my own, I did a lot more to educate myself than Mr. Ouellette seems to have done in this case. And even after the fact, even after meeting with Jeffrey Stern, and even after the briefing filed in this case, he's still denying that he engaged in unethical behavior.
You also made a statement that he didn't really know enough about probate or trust law to actually revise the documents, revise the cover letters that were supplied by the out-of-state firm, mm-hmm. and that's in the record mm-hmm. somewhere? Or?
Yes, and I even went through his, there were questions where he was asked about certain statements in the letter that he sent to the Trotts, and he said he couldn't explain that information. It was in the letter that EPLS had prepared. And then in his deposition, which is, I believe, part of the record, and I went through his continuing legal education to talk about what classes he'd actually taken in trust and estates and probate law.
And is there information in the record whether this was his sole, these clients were the sole people that he used this on, or was there, you know, sort of a more than this?
To the extent that he had other clients, he did not use the EPLS document. And I know that's in his deposition. I can't remember if it was in the trial. But I know the engagement letter that he used, he only used for the estate planning legal services clients and not with any of his other clients. And that is in the record.
But he did have more, more clients than the trots?
Yes. Oh, EPLS referred him 135 clients. And if you look, I believe Exhibit 25 is his listing of all the clients that he had received and how much money he received from them. And then he would have sent about half of each fee to EPLS.
Thank you.
Now, he says that's over $100,000 that I see that he got to keep. He testified that he only had $40,000 in revenue after expenses. What I would submit is there are more violations in this case than even in the Fishman case. Heisler and Kramer, both of those attorneys drafted the documents themselves, and Heisler had no idea that they were being set up for sales presentations after the fact. And if there are no further questions, I will.
Thank you, Ms. Heppner. I should tell you, you still have 3 minutes left, and you did ask for rebuttal time, but I don't read your brief as filing objections to the board's recommendations, so you would not have rebuttal time. Did I mishear you?
No, I thought I did reserve rebuttal time.
Oh, but you don't, you're essentially the appellee, and so you don't have, unless you file objections.
Okay.
But I don't see any objections.
No, we did not file
okay.
any objections.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Mann, you've reserved a little over 2 minutes of your
thank you,
of
your
time.
In the Dan Heisler case, I would point out that Mr. Heisler was working with a trust mill from Louisiana. EPLS was a law firm in Michigan, not licensed to practice in Ohio. And as I recall in the Dan Heisler case, the trust mill personnel actually went out and met with the clients before the lawyer ever did. And if I'm wrong about my recollection of those facts, then I'll stand corrected. With respect to the trust in this case, and I'll be very brief on these points, Mr. Ouellette prepared it. Former OSBA president and CBA president Tom Bonacere reviewed it, said it's a proper trust at a proper fee. With respect, there's been some implied criticism that Mr. Ouellette should not have gone out to the client's home on Halloween. He did that at their invitation and for their convenience. When he got there, he suggested we should go inside. They wanted to sit outside. That's their call. I don't think any implied misconduct is appropriate. Mr. Ouellette did not set anybody up for Mr. Spence or anybody else. At page 13 of Mrs. Ouellette's deposition, it indicates Mr. Ouellette said, I can have somebody come out to witness this document, make sure it's properly funded, make it operational, and give you additional financial advice if you want that. They had the right to just say no or yes. Initially, they said yes. Subsequently, they said no, and that meeting never took place. They always, of course, had the right to just say no. With the court's permission, I'm simply going to wrap up by saying Phil Ouellette treated these clients respectfully and properly. He listened to what they said, and they say he didn't intentionally mislead us about anything. He provided a good service, a proper service for a fee. He's a good lawyer, a good person, and a good family man, and we would ask that his suspension be stayed so that he can continue to do what he loves, practice law, and take care of his family.
Thank you, Mr. Mann. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our
opinion. Thank you for allowing me to visit with you. Thank you.
Marshal will please adjourn court.